Welcome, Pewter Report readers and listeners, to another edition of the Pewter Nation podcast. This is your late night after dark edition. It's a little after 1 a.m. We are sitting at Raymond James Stadium after the Buccaneers. Didn't take advantage of an opportunity here. Guys,
that's a good way to put it.
This kind of reminds me of that New Orleans game last year. Everything on the line. A win gets them in the playoffs. And they fought back. They just couldn't get the win. It's to the point now where, you know, when are the Buccaneers going to make that next step and where the problem is? Let me just say this up front. You guys know I'm a Florida State guy. I love Jameis Winston. But here's my declaration of the night. This team will never be better than an 8-8 or 9-7 football team until number three becomes a more consistent quarterback. We can blame Nick Folk all you want, and he definitely deserves the blame. But Jameis Winston did not play well through three quarters in this football game. If he plays well in two of the four quarters, they win this football game. If he plays great in three of them, they win going away. Jameis Winston has got to be the difference maker, and he's got to figure out a way to be more consistent.
You said this reminded you of the Saints game last year. This reminded me of the Rams game last year, a very low-scoring Rams game. Mm-hmm. That game was a shootout. Nobody saw that coming. Nobody saw 19-14 coming either. I think we all predicted this would be a game in the high 20s, if not 30s. And really, it was kind of a defensive slugfest, and part of that was due to the fact the Buccaneers couldn't get out of their own way and couldn't get a third-down conversion until the wee minutes remaining in the third quarter. But the reason I say the Rams game, Mark, is because that was a game where the Buccaneers were inside the red zone. Jameis Winston, had to make a play, that game-winning play, mm-hmm. and he came up and he didn't make it. And that was the same instance here. Yes, it's a tough situation. You're not at the one-yard line, the five-yard line. You're going to have to throw a pinpoint laser pass. And, of course, the Saints must have dropped seven back in the end zone, which made it challenging.
And the Patriots.
Who did I say?
The Saints, but the that's Saints. Okay.
Yeah, the Patriots. And this is the number one overall draft pick in 2015. And he's got to win these types of games. You've seen Aaron Rodgers win games. You've seen Tom Brady win games. You've seen Matt Ryan win games, Drew Brees. If Jameis Winston wants to be in that conversation with those quarterbacks, he's got to make the plays they make to win these games. And I agree with you, Mark. I think that this team is on the outside looking in of the playoff picture until he starts winning some of these games.
Well, and let's give Jameis this much credit. After the game, and I've just been out of his press conference, 20 minutes ago, as dejected as we've seen him in his two-plus years here in Tampa, and he pinned this loss solely on him, not on Nick Folk. He said his message to Nick Folk was rebound. He said, but I've got to make a play. He reiterated that. He banged on the desk at one point four times.
I'm going to bang on the damn desk. Nick Folk's not going to be here. He's not going to be the kicker of this team anymore.
We need Mark Moseley, a toe kicker. These shocker kickers stink. So, but Jameis banged on the desk. He said the defense played great. The offensive line protected great. The running backs ran great. The receivers caught great. The quarterback didn't make a play when he had to make a play at the end of the game.
The kicker didn't make the damn kicks, Mark. When you look at this game here, you look at Kyle Brinza. You look at Roberto Aguayo. You look at now Nick Folk. He missed more kicks this week than anybody. And I'm talking about Nick Folk in the Giants game and Nick Folk in this game. This is the curse of Matt Bryant, I'm telling you. Dagnabbit.
First of all, we know that's not you, Uncle Stan, because it's 1 a.m. and you've been asleep for about 9 hours already.
No, he's the old prospector. He's on the night shift.
Yeah, he's on the night shift. Actually, he's just getting up. He's starting his day.
Oh,
he
okay.
gets up
right.
about
yeah,
1 a.m.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm having my morning coffee. but listen, Jameis, again, yes, Nick makes two of those kicks. We're not talking about Jameis' slow start and his poor three quarters, but look, he's the face of the franchise. He's the guy that everyone expects to make this jump from year two to year three, and he just hasn't made any jump yet through four games.
It's baffling to me, Mark, because one of the reasons why Jason Light loved Jameis Winston, one of the reasons why the Buccaneers wanted him over Marcus Mariota 7 days a week, not six out of seven, 7 days a week. Jameis was the clear pick because he was a gamer, because he won the national championship as a redshirt freshman, because of all of those third and fourth quarter comebacks that we saw him make at Florida State, the Louisville game, those types of games.
29 straight wins.
That has not translated into the NFL for him. And what I don't understand is this is a guy who won the Heisman Trophy, won the national championship, played in nationally televised games of Florida State almost every single week. A lot of those games in primetime, and Jameis Winston in primetime games is 1-4, including tonight's loss. And he gets off to some horrific starts. I'm outlining this. I think I'm going to put it in the Fab Five for Friday, and I'm going to write something different for the two-point conversion, which will come out on Saturday. But I'm doing some research here, and Jameis Winston in these games, let me just read off his first half stats. Going back to the Rams game, this is the Rams game Thursday night in 2015, and then the Panthers game on Monday night last year, the Falcons game on Thursday night last year, the Dallas Cowboys game on Sunday night, the game that got flexed, that was in primetime, and then, of course, the Patriots game tonight. These are his first halves. 6 of 12 for 49 yards in a 31-23 loss to the Rams. Against the Panthers, a 17-14 win, his only win in primetime. 9 of 14 for 85 yards. Against the Falcons, he actually came out and played the best of any of his primetime performances. 13 of 19 for 136 yards and 2 touchdowns. Against Dallas, 6 of 12 for 81 yards and an interception. And then tonight, 8 of 16 yards for 71 yards in the first half against the Patriots. You add that all up, and he's completing 57% of his throws for 422 yards with 2 touchdowns and 1 pick. But the problem is, guys, in every single one of those games, with the exception of the Monday night win against the Panthers, they trailed at the half every single time. And he
Blake Bortles syndrome.
Yeah, and he's had to have
syndrome.
This furious fourth quarter to try to come back, and all it does is pad the stats.
Look,
but it doesn't result in the win.
Somebody just said this after the game. They were talking about it, and they were kind of commenting about it with Winston, and they're like, look, he never gave up. You know, like he gave his team a chance to win it at the end. And, like, people were saying, you know, like, that's what you love about Winston because he's a gamer, all that stuff.
But he doesn't give you a chance to win in the first half.
At what point are we going to stop using that excuse? Because that's what it is. We all think it's great that Winston can be this quarterback that can bring any team. It's fun to watch. It's great. But there's a reason why you continue to see these moments where he has to come back. It's because he, along with other things, it's not just him. I'm not just trying to say it's Jameis. Jameis is a talented dude.
Yes, you are. You're a Gator. Go ahead.
I am. Yeah, I'm a double agent trying to get Jameis off the team. But like he has bad first halves, and he has these Blake Bortles moments where people are going to be so mad at me for that, but whatever, man. I don't care. You should not have to baby the number one overall pick into like getting his feet wet or getting a rhythm or something or blah blah blah. Like, dude, there are two halves of football. You have to play good both halves. You can't just have these second half games where you put up all these stats and you give your chance to a team to win it, or you give your team a chance to win it at the end. Give your team a chance to win it in the first half.
I agree with everything you said, but Dirk Koetter in this game did no favors for Jameis Winston.
I'll tell you right now,
the turning point of this game, in my opinion, was with 3 minutes and 42 seconds left right before halftime. And Trevor, I'm sitting here talking to you. We're looking at the clock in the press box, and I said, they got to run the ball right here. Yep. Doug Martin is averaging 7.9 yards per carry. This is situational football.
Yep.
You're going up against the best situational head coach in the NFL history
in
Bill Belichick. You cannot give them the ball before halftime. You're going to get the ball, Dirk Koetter and Jameis Winston and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, because you won the toss and elected to defer. So that score at halftime has to be 10-7 Patriots, 10-10 tie, or 14-10 Buccaneers. Those are the three options. It can't be 13-7, and that's what it was because we saw three straight passes. The Buccaneers started at their 25-yard line. The first play resulted in a sack. It's now 2nd-15. Now you have to pass. And then it became 3rd-9. And so a grand total of just over a minute elapsed from the clock. The Patriots got the ball back with 2:13 left, and they went down and scored a field goal. And that changed the complexion of the game, in my opinion. There was another big play that Dirk pointed out in his press conference that was in the third quarter. The overthrow.
First third down, the overthrow to
DeSean Jackson.
You know, but this has always been a pet peeve of mine in football. On third and short, you're trying to move the chains here. I understand it was a matchup they wanted, and if it was a good throw, it's a touchdown, and maybe that changes the momentum of the game. The Bucs go on to win it. But move the chains here. You're throwing a 40-yard pass in the air, a low-percentage type pass. It just frustrates me sometimes that's the decision-making, and it's not just from Jameis. I see this with quarterbacks all the time in college in the NFL. Now, again, the matchup was there that you want. But you haven't been. It's not like it's an automatic, right?
No, it's
not like you've been successful at
halftime. Doug Martin is rushing for 7.9 yards per carry. He had 7 carries for 55 yards and a touchdown.
What was the key to the game for everybody? You got to run the ball. You got to control it, right?
Yes.
Their running back averaged almost 8 yards a carry in the
run
first half.
Run the ball until they stop you.
Right.
It's the principle of football.
It goes back to Pop Warner football. It goes back to high school. It goes back to college. If something's working, keep doing it until they stop you.
We talk about Jameis getting into a rhythm. I never felt Dirk got into any kind of play-calling rhythm in this game. At times, he wanted to throw the ball every
run
time.
Up the
and
middle,
at times, he wanted to run all the time.
Pitch. Toss.
See, the Patriots do this, and I talked about this in the Cover 3. I think I talked about it with you earlier in the week. The Patriots do this really weird thing where if something is working, they don't go away from it, and it shows up on the play call sheet. Like the first two drives that they had last week against the Panthers, they threw the ball 11 times.
Yeah,
ran it once. You know why? Because it got them into field goal range basically both times.
Right.
And so they just kept doing it. And then you know what they did on the third drive that they had?
They almost ran it exclusively.
4 straight times they ran the ball. You know why? First one, 8 yards. Second one, 9 yards. Third one, 5 yards. And whatever the fourth one was, they stopped them. And it's like, oh, okay, now we can go back to doing other stuff.
Yeah.
But it's like, man,
a lot
I don't,
of times the Buccaneers
they're just outthinking themselves.
Seems to stop itself.
You had a really good point during the game, and it was that they've talked about, both Monken and Cutter have talked about, you know, getting to things in the game plan, how they like a lot of that. And they probably take pride in, you know, the certain plays that they think are going to work throughout the week. And that's great that you have those things, but it's almost as if they're too obsessed with getting to those plays.
Yeah. Getting to the money plays, the sweet plays that they think, you know, are going to work. And you know what? When they're executed, when Cam Brate's not dropping passes and Jameis is not overthrowing DeSean, they work. But the problem is what you're doing is you're straying away from what's working. And it may be the boring stuff. It may be the runs. It may be, you know, a certain check down pass play. I mean, how many times do we see Tom Brady just check the ball down to his running backs in the flat and pick up 5 yards every time?
Well, how about Jameis Winston having that opportunity in the first half and overthrowing Doug Martin, who would have had a first down there? I mean, Brady just doesn't do that. He had a bad throw that Justin Evans picked off in the game. But, I mean, there's just too many of those throws from Jameis Winston that's frustrating. And, you know, where's the bubble screens to Adam Humphrey that he liked to run like crazy last
they tried
year?
They tried the bubble screen to DeSean Jackson that got eaten.
And he almost died.
I hate bubble screens, but like, you know, I was talking about this. I was on a Patriots podcast earlier this week.
But that's an extended run play. Dirk talks about that. I mean, those quick passes to the out, that's essentially
your passing game is almost your running game at that point. But that's the thing. Like, I was talking about this on the podcast. You know, we were joking. We were like, you know, if Adam Humphries on the Patriots, is he a Hall of Famer? And we kind of like we kind of laughed about it. But I mean, think about it. When you really think about that idea, yeah, probably. I mean, not literally a Hall of Famer, but like he's having Amendola like numbers every single game.
Yes,
the Bucs have that player on their team. Do it. Do that stuff.
They don't have number 12.
That's
on
true.
The team.
That's
but,
true.
And, no.
When Jameis Winston misses a wide open Doug Martin in the flat for a first down.
But that's what I'm saying.
That's the problem.
You can make a game play. Tom Brady is phenomenal at what he does for so much about how he deals with pressure and how he reads defenses and these things like that. But a lot of the times he is completing 4, 5, 6 yard passes. You've got to be able to see a defense, and you noticed this during the game. The Patriots, and Cutter talked about it afterwards, they run a lot of man coverage, or they have earlier this season. Tonight, they ran a good amount
really
of zone, and
up.
What they did is they rushed three guys, dropped eight into a heavy zone. You've still got, like, even if you dropped eight on Tom Brady, he could put the ball where he needs to in his zone. Guess what? So can Winston. But I don't even think they run. I don't even think they're running route. And I can't say this for sure, so I might regret saying this. But like, I don't even know if they're running the routes to do stuff like that, because it feels like the passes that are completed in this offense are either 10, 11, 12 yards or screens.
Yeah. Well, tonight they took away a lot of the deep stuff because they were playing cover two.
Right.
So they're going to do that.
But nickel and dime them, man.
But if you're playing cover two, that's where you've got to exploit things with two great tight ends.
Yeah.
I mean, that's where you can match up tight ends against linebackers.
But the problem, though, is when you're dropping eight. See, the thing is, the Patriots would show four or show five.
Oh, sure.
And then
they
would drop eight.
Out of it, sure.
Okay, and then you would have Winston, and they would mix that up. Sometimes they would send five out of that
which
look.
Is
sometimes
great
they'd
on
send
them.
Four. Sometimes they would only send three. And what that does is that causes Winston to hesitate and say, how many are dropping, how many are coming? And once he makes that determination, then he's trying to find the open receiver. And that varies if there's six in coverage or seven in coverage or eight in coverage.
But I'll tell you, you know, everybody's worried about Jameis not hitting those deep passes to DeSean Jackson. We saw where DeSean Jackson can be most effective on this football team tonight.
Catch and run.
Well, a little shallow cross. And just that was the speed that we haven't seen on this football team since Joey Galloway.
Yeah.
I mean, there was six guys trying to catch this guy.
Yeah.
You know, why can't they get him moving, get the ball to him, moving?
Yeah.
You know,
a little five-yard out does nothing
for me with DeSean Jackson. That doesn't do anything.
Right.
He's not going to turn that.
Mesh concepts. Just put him over the middle every time.
Yeah.
But here's what you do.
If he makes one guy miss, then it's a five-yard game that's
DeSean
turned into
Jackson
a 25-yard
and
game.
And an O.J. Howard, and they both run a mesh concept. You can't cover both of them.
That's right.
There's no way. There's, like, nobody in the NFL that can do that stuff. And we just don't see it from this Bucs team. It's almost, you know, we talk about Cutter having a vertical offense, like in a stretch of the field, and that's great, man, but I don't see a lot of simple stuff from this. And in that sense, it makes it hard for Winston. So that is, I guess, you know, I give him a little bit of credit because I think the offense is harder than it has to be. But, you know, what are you going to do?
So, listen, last year the Buccaneers played the Falcons, a team that especially with Dirk Cutter and Mike Smith and them being in the same division, they know the Falcons intimately. The Falcons did wax the Buccaneers. Part of that was because the Buccaneers were dead from playing five quarters against the Oakland Raiders. Okay, but the preparation was easier because of the familiarity. The execution just wasn't there last year on Thursday night. This year, you're playing an unfamiliar opponent in the New England Patriots, and you're playing against Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, a defensive wizard and offensive mastermind when it comes to distributing the ball. How much did not having those extra days to prepare cause the Buccaneers to have this type of performance?
I'll say zero, because the defense gave up 19 points and the offense was crap through three quarters. And they weren't crap through three quarters because the Patriots were getting turnovers, getting sacks. They were doing it because
wounds.
The Buccaneers self-inflicted. Their quarterback did not play well, and their kicker can't hit a damn kick.
Which side of the ball had the key injuries? It was the side of the ball that still played really well.
Yeah.
It was the side of the ball that had all the excuses in the world.
Right.
And still
DeMar
limited.
DeMar Dotson told me after
out,
the game.
Juan Alexander out.
No
Devontae,
Keith Tandy.
David out.
You know.
DeMar told me after the game, and again, we were just talking, and he goes, man, if you'd have told me. First of all, he said, this one hurts as bad as any since he's been here.
Yeah.
Number two, he said, if you'd have said the defense was only going to give up 19 points, I said we'd have won all day long.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I think
yes.
everybody would have. If you look at our predictions, we all had pretty much high-scoring games going into this.
Yeah, definitely.
And it just didn't pan out.
Hold on.
Understatement of the night in the Buccaneer locker room, Nick Folk saying, I had a bad week.
Yeah. He's got to be cut, right?
He will be.
Dirk said it.
Said him and Jason. If he and Jason talked about it right after the game,
yeah,
it's going to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not discussing it to say, well, let's invite him for a Christmas
party. It's just
party.
Like on Hard Knocks when Jason was caught on camera telling Dirk had to sleep on it,
yeah,
but we have to do it.
Yeah.
And that's the thing here is I don't think – the biggest thing is the head coach is the play caller. And it's a lot of pressure on Dirk Cutter on 4th and 2 going forward about whether you decide to go for it. And that's in any quarter of any game going forward. Whether you go for it on offense or whether you trot out your kicker.
How are you telling yourself you can't get 2 yards?
If this team is 4-12, Dirk Cutter gets fired, Jason Light probably stays. Dirk Cutter should be banging on Jason's desk tomorrow morning. I need a damn kicker because I have a kicker. We win this game. We're 3-1.
Yes.
3-1 and 2-2 is a huge
difference.
It's
a really good point.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah.
And you know, Dirk is ultimately going to – his head's on the block way before Jason's.
Check YouTube.
Yes.
YouTube kickers.
Not you, Trevor.
Hey, I retweeted a Pat Murray.
No, I'm a Twitter kicker.
Hey, Pat Murray was out there kicking. He tweeted a long-distance field goal from himself.
Now, I get
and
that.
And I retweeted that.
I definitely get that kicking, like anybody can kick. It's the mentality part, right? But I tweeted this during the game. There's 32 of these jobs in the world.
Yeah.
And they pay, at a minimum, $465,000 a year. There's
right.
32 of these jobs in
you
the world.
$465,000?
No, right? 100,000.
100,000.
Yeah. Did I not say 100,000? All right, sorry.
Yeah.
The one with the more zeros on
okay,
it.
Yeah.
Okay. You're telling me you can't get a kicker? There's 32 of these jobs in the world.
Yeah.
You're telling me you can't get a kicker? Come
it's
on,
crazy.
Man. That's like that's so crazy to me. And the fact that the Bucks literally overdrafted a kicker.
Yeah.
To try to avoid this problem.
How did the Patriots kicker?
You can't
do?
Say that.
How
that,
did the Patriots kicker?
Hold on. Here's the thing.
Godkowski?
Yeah.
He's perfect.
Here's the thing. You can't say that the Buccaneers haven't tried to address
no,
the
can't.
Situation.
No, you
Jason
can't.
Light has traded
that's
for a kicker
point.
In Kyle Brinson.
Godkowski, that's the reason he drafted Roberto Aguayo because of what Bill Belichick told him when he drafted Godkowski.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, you got to have. You want a guy that you don't have to worry about for the next 10 years.
Yeah.
And it didn't pan out, unfortunately. He tried.
He
but
did.
You saw
he did.
You saw him come in and nail a 47-yarder
yeah.
with all the pressure in the world, knowing
sure.
it changes it from a one-score game to a two-score game
yeah.
or whatever it
Bucks
turned out, or not making it where they
the
have
Bucks,
to score a touchdown,
the Bucks
in other
win
words.
That game if he misses that field goal. And was there ever any doubt in your mind that he wasn't
no,
going to miss that field
goal? No, of course not.
You
knew he was going to make it.
Not a chance.
Knew he was
well,
going to make it.
I'll tell
it.
You, I think Uncle Stan actually had a point before he went to bed.
Even before he got up.
This is the curse of Matt Bryant. It really is because the Buccaneers parted ways with him. I think they went with Patrick Murray, didn't they?
No, I think it was Connor
year.
First.
Was it Connor? Okay.
I think.
They went with one of those guys before Matt Bryant. Matt Bryant is still kicking in Atlanta.
Wait, it may have even been before Connor because Matt's been gone a long time.
Yeah.
But yeah, Matt Bryant is doing pretty well for himself in Atlanta. One of the most accurate kicker in Atlanta Falcons history.
Yeah.
You know, he's got a ton of game winners under his belt.
Well,
he's just an automatic guy.
He nailed a 63-yarder here against the Philadelphia Eagles?
61-yarder? 62, yeah. Yeah, and beat the Eagles while Donovan McNabb was thrown up on the sideline. But anyway, it's the case of, damn it, when is this team going to break through? And that's the frustration from 64,000 people here tonight.
Yeah.
That's the frustration even from that locker room. That's the frustration from Jason Light, who was sitting in this room we're in right now watching the game. When are we going to push through it? At what point are we going to do it? And I'm telling you, I'll just say it. I'll sum up the rest I've got to say by what I said to open this thing up. When number 3 starts playing consistent football is when they'll push to that next level.
Inconsistently means in primetime games, in big games like this, you can't afford the slow starts.
No.
You have to put points on the
no.
scoreboard.
Coach has
got to
help you.
Single
your play callers
quarter.
Has got to help you. 100%.
Every
help you.
Single quarter, you got to put points on the board. You have to come out and win these primetime games and put the points up on the scoreboard. And you can't wait until the fourth quarter to try to play catch-up.
Man, I know it was the preseason, but how their offense, the first team offense, just looked so methodical. When they played in the preseason.
Yeah.
Like, think about that Bengals game.
Yeah.
Immediately
march right
immediately
down
march down, score.
Yeah. You
know, next drive, immediately marched down. I think it was a field goal or something. You know, whatever it was. But they just marched the ball down the field against the Jacksonville Jaguars. Yep. Basically, whole game minus a couple drives. You know, that weird throw by Winston in the end zone, whatever. Methodical, whole time.
They had
got
no
down the
problem
field.
Getting into the red zone. Yeah, the problem was just the red zone.
They do now. Yes. That's what I'm saying. I don't get it. They were playing against starters. I know it's a preseason, but, like, come on.
Well, the thing, too, is you got to keep in mind, you're talking about the defending Super Bowl champion New England Patriots.
Worst defense in the NFL.
But they're not going to – but here's the deal, Trevor.
But
that's
they
true.
Were the
with
worst
the best
defense.
Coaching staff. And they're not – that's the one thing I said. I did a thing with Sirius last night. They're not going to finish the year as the worst defense
in
the league.
No, I don't think so. And
they're
I don't think so either.
Coaches
but there was
talent.
There was a blueprint to what worked and what confused them in the Carolina game, and the Bucs did none of it.
Alex
none
Smith
of it.
Torched the Patriots. Cam Newton torched the Patriots. A rookie, Deshaun Watson, torched the Patriots' defense. And here you have Jameis Winston, Mike Evans, Doug Martin, Deshaun Jackson, O.J. Howard, and Cam Brate. All of those guys, and you put up 14 points.
Dirk said 14 points is not going to cut it.
No.
Never.
Yeah,
no.
Now, I don't remember exactly what the line was on this. I think it was 5.5 points before this game
It was five
started.
And a half, and then it went down to 3.5.
So if you would have bet on the Buccaneers – Oh, well, it went down.
It went down.
But if you had a bet in the middle of the week,
Scott,
somebody would have put some money down on mybookie.ag.
Yeah.
Put some money on the Buccaneers when it was 5.5. They'd be pretty happy right now, regardless of the loss.
No, you're exactly right. And listen, we've had some really good success here in getting people to mybookie.ag. If you want to get into the gambling aspect of football, if you want to make your Sundays, your Mondays, your Thursday nights more thrilling.
Guarantee you'll stay up for every Thursday night and every Monday night game.
Without a doubt. And not just NFL games, college, all sports. Go to mybookie.ag. They've got the fastest payouts. You win, you get paid. Within 48 hours, that money is yours. The best part about this, guys, and we've all taken, I got to admit, I took the last 2 weeks off. I'm going to dive back in. I like some matchups coming up this weekend.
Can I just tell you, take Miami against Florida State, but go ahead.
But yeah, if you know who's going to win, go to mybookie.ag. If you mention the Pewter Nation podcast when you sign up, if you mention the code word, the promo word, Pewter, they're going to match your deposit. So if you put in $25 to start, they're going to give you $25. You'll start with $50. If you put in $100, all of a sudden, boom, thanks to mybookie.ag, and you mention Pewter, they're going to give you $200. If you're someone who wants to really, you know, give this a good runny go, put in $500, put in $1,000, and they will match your initial deposit. Mention the word Pewter on mybookie.ag.
If the Bucks sign you to be their kicker and you get $465,000, you could put it.
100 million thousand quadrillion dollars.
You could put it right on.
You could.
My bookie, and they will match it.
Yeah, they'll match it for sure.
The other thing, too, is aside from just that type of action, they also have live in-game betting, too. So if you want to outsmart the wise guys, if you want to put some wagers on first quarter, halftime scoring, those types of inside the game games, you can do that too. Mybookie.ag, it's where we go when we want to get in on our sports action.
And I have bet every week that Ben McAdoo was going to shave his mustache, and he's yet to do it. So, but I'm going to put another $100 down this week that before the game Sunday, McAdoo will
he
not
needs
have the
to
stash.
Shave it.
Yeah, but he's put on some weight too, by the way. Looks like Ben McAdoo ate Ben McAdoo. But anyway, we're going to get out of here. It's after 1:30 in the morning. We love doing this podcast, but we're also old, except for Trevor.
I'm not.
And anyway, we're going to get out of here. We'll figure out another day for a podcast later this week. The Bucks are going to be off.
Mini bye week.
Yep, mini bye week.
Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. Then we'll be back at One Buck in Your Place on Tuesday. So
probably Wednesday. We may do another
podcast.
Expect
a podcast on Wednesday.
And we'll kind of wrap that up, and we'll look ahead to the Arizona Cardinals, which now, guys, you don't want to use the word must win, but this is another crucial game, a bounce-back game, you know, just like the game was against the Giants. I mean, you're back to that point now, and you had an opportunity to be 3-1 through a quarter of your season, and right now you're playing 500 football. Arizona Cardinals, a beatable football team, but we'll delve into that a little bit more coming up later in the week for our next podcast. Make sure to check out the Fab Five, which will be out this weekend, the two-point conversion. Check out all of our post-game coverage. We'll have a new fifth down sponsored by Ford's Garage. We had, who did I? Oh, I got Ali Marpet,
It's a good one.
Yeah, Allie's cool. Good. He's a cool cat. He gave us some good answers for that story. So check that out coming up tomorrow. Well, Friday, whenever you're listening to this, it'll be up Friday on pewterreport.com. So anyway, for Scott Reynolds and Trevor Sikkema, I am Mark Cook saying we will see you next week for another edition of the Pewter Nation Podcast.